back to another episode of OTR Playlist. With Memorial Day coming up at the time of this recording in just a few days, I thought I would put together a kind of a World War II tieback episode. So I have three episodes of a popular show during World War II. It was called GI Journal. It was a comedy show, variety show. It had a ton of people that appeared on it. Bob Hope, Bing Crosby, Lucille Ball was on, Fibber McGee and Molly, which was another old-time radio show. One of my favorites was Mel Blanc, who played Private Sad Sack. So it's a really good show. There was a lot of big band music that was also on there. You'd have the Armed Forces Orchestra and Captain Glenn Miller. So I think you'll enjoy these shows. And I also have three episodes of one of my favorite old-time radio series, Cloak and Dagger, which was a show that aired May 7th to October 22nd, 1950. There's just a handful of episodes. Off the top of my head, I'm going to say maybe 15 episodes or so. Not a lot, but involves a lot of espionage, and it's one of my favorites. So with that all being said, I hope you enjoy this show. Here we go. Here we're going to start off with GI Journal, and it's from December 22nd, 1944.
The GI Journal goes to press. Hello, GI Journal, Editor-in-Chief Bob Hope speaking. You want to place an ad? Just a second. I'll take it down. Okay, shoot. P-38 pilot wants to meet girl flyer with thorough knowledge of mechanics. Object contact. Okay, we'll print it up right away. Let's see now. Where's that office boy of mine? Oh, boy, boy.
Here I am, Chief.
Oh, fine. You haven't been a boy since Crosby had hair. Look. Look, G.I. Journal's in bad shape. Can you think of any way to increase the circulation of this paper?
Sure, we ought to give something away.
Like what, for instance?
The paper.
I knew I could count on you for a clever lull.
I don't know what you're kicking about. We're running more ads than ever. Here's another one just came in for the lost and found department.
Let's see it. Found mink coat and closet, a suburban home with easily Jimmy downstairs window. We'll gladly inform old owner of coat's whereabouts in return for $1,000 in combination to stubby little safe and den. Address, 104-8837 Alcatraz 9, California. Nice class of people we're dealing with anyway. Any other ads come in?
Yeah, here's one from the Social Security Boys Athletic Club.
Let's read it. It says, attention, man 80 years old. Are you living a full life? Do you get as much kick out of things as you did when you were 75? And most important of all, how do you fare with members of the opposite sex? Is your bark worse than your bite? Or when the time comes to bite, do you just sit there and bark? Perhaps you think you're in your second childhood. If so, send no money. Just a stamped, self-addressed envelope with a $5 bill in it, and we'll ship by return mail a celluloid boat and a sponge duck to sail in your tub. Act now. This offer may expire before you do. Remember, if you're 80 years old and looking for a mate, we can help you. Just make this simple test. Can you reach down and touch your toes without bending your knees? You can? Then do it often. That's enough excitement for a guy your age. Fine ad. What this paper needs is a Hollywood gossip columnist, somebody that can dish out all the news that's fit to clean up. I advertised for one yesterday. Look in the outer office to see if anybody showed up yet.
Okay, Chief. Well, what can I do for you, lady?
You advertised for a Hollywood columnist.
That's right, lady.
Well, I'm Luella Parsons.
Oh, what can I do for you, lady?
You can tell me where to reach Editor Hope.
Well, he's pretty busy, but I'll tell him you're here. Hey, boss, there's a girl out there to see you.
What kind of a girl?
Well...
Tell her she'll have to wait a few minutes. I've got to straighten out this musical page. Okay, Sergeant Harry Bluestone, let's proofread that young man with a horn. Bring on that Air Force's band of yours. Thank you very much. Very pretty. Hello?
Hello. Say, I understand you're looking for a Hollywood columnist.
That's
a
right.
A gossip columnist for G.I. Journal.
That's right, lady, but I got to be pretty careful about who I hire. I need an expert newspaper woman.
Oh, what's the matter with me? I've been around a long time.
Obviously, but, can you write?
Certainly. I've written a Hollywood column since Napoleon was a PFC.
Yes, sir. There we go. Yes, sir.
In fact, the movie stars don't do anything without calling me first.
Anything? Say, you must have... You must have a busy phone.
Oh, I do. And a lot of the stars come to me for advice. For instance, I was the one who told Lana Turner to stop wearing sweaters.
You're giving yourselves a fine buildup. I could kill you for that. What are some of your other qualifications?
I predicted in 1942 that talking pictures would be successful.
1942, but talking pictures came out in 1927.
That's me. No snap judgment. Well, do I get the job?
Well, I'm not sure yet. I don't know if you'd be good for the inside dope and the real hot news and the movie stars.
You don't, eh? Well, Mr. Hope, I know where you were last night between the hours of 9 and 12.
You do?
I do.
The job is yours, and name your own salary. How does she know where I was last night? Say, what's your name anyway?
Luella Parsons.
Luella Parsons? Well, Miss Parsons, need I tell you that I feel like a fool?
No.
What's the matter with me lately? I've seen you 1,000 times.
Think nothing of it. All right, Bob.
No, it isn't. I should have known you right away.
Don't be so nervous. Stop biting my nail.
Oh, I'm sorry. Honestly, Luella, I could just punch holes in my head after all those wonderful reviews you've written about me. Gosh, I'll never forget what you said about my first picture years ago. Bob Hope is going places.
I also said I'll chip in for the train fare.
That was cute, yes. Anyhow, Luella, what's new around Hollywood?
Oh, there's plenty going around in this old town, Bob.
Anything we can print?
Yes. For example, I just learned that a certain producer and a certain starlet plan to elope to a certain nearby resort and take those certain vows, which will make them Mr. You-Know-Who.
They were just meant for each other. They're a lovely couple, aren't they?
Who?
Never mind. Please continue.
Now, here's a little item about lovely, glamorous Hedy Lamarr. It seems she takes daily sunbaths on her roof.
I know. Hedy lives out in my neighborhood.
Really?
Yeah. Tell me, Luella, is that a beauty mark on her back or a fly on my telescope?
Now, don't tell me you're a peeping Tom.
No, I'm more of a bug-eyed Bob. But Luella... But, Luella, I've been thinking, you know a lot of beautiful Hollywood stars, and if we could get some of them down here to pose for pictures, I'm sure we'd boost the journal's circulation, not to mention my own.
As a matter of fact, Bob, I've invited Dolly Lamour here tonight.
Well, jolly, Lolly, you know it'll be a pleasure to see Lamour without the crooning skinhead around.
Stop the presses, Chief. Here are G.I. Journal star girl reporters with that layout you ordered. The Andrews Sisters.
To make you feel so very glad, Calypso sing and make a rhyme, guarantee you one real good fine time, drinking rum and Coca-Cola. Go down Point Kumana, both mother and daughter, working for the Yankee dollar. Since the Yankee come to Trinidad, they got the young girls all going mad. Young girls say they treat them nice, make Trinidad like paradise. Drinking rum and Coca-Cola. Go down Point Cumana, both mother and daughter, working for the Yankee dollar.
From Chickachickary to Mona's Isle, native girls all dance and smile, help soldiers celebrate his leave, make every day like New Year's Eve.
Drinking rum and Coca-Cola, go down Point Cumana, both mother and daughter, working for the Yankee dollar. In old Trinidad, I also fear the situation is mighty queer. Like the Yankee girl, the native swoon when she heard her bingo croon. Drinking rum and Coca-Cola, go down Point Cumana, both mother and daughter, working for the Yankee dollar. Out on Manzanella Beach, G.I. romance with native peach. All night long make tropic love, next day sitting hot sun and cool off. Drinking rum and Coca-Cola, go down Point Cumana, both mother and daughter, working for the Yankee dollar. Rum and Coca-Cola. Working for the Yankee dollar.
Yes, sir. Oh, yes. They're comers, all right. And that turns the page to G.I. Journal's original Song of the Week department, and we point with pride to another brand new tune written overseas and mailed to us here at Armed Forces Radio, Los Angeles, USA. Men, we've really been getting some great tunes from you overseas songwriters, and we hope if any more of you have written a song you'd like to hear on G.I. Journal that you'll send it along. This week's musical scoop is a tune called You Better See Me by Captain Joseph Blankenship at APO 708. And here to sing it back to you, Joe, is our copy gal in the original Song of the Week department, Miss Connie Haynes.
Then I suggest that you better see me. The doctors and the lawyers can cure your pains and stress, but I can't cure your loneliness. So if you're tired of working every day, better change the scenery right away. But if suggest that you better see me. The doctors and lawyers can cure your pain and stress, but I can't cure all of your loneliness. If you're tired of working every day, better change the scenery right away. But if you want a romance instead of a rest, then I suggest that you better see me.
Connie Hayes, and congratulations, Captain Joe Blankenship. Wasn't that swell, Luella? Come in.
Hello, Luella.
Hello, why, Donnie Lamour.
Hello, Donnie. You remember me, Bob Hope?
Oh, yes. You're on your hind legs tonight.
I don't know how that rumor got around about me.
Look, Bob, no one in a skirt is safe around you, and you know it.
I wouldn't say that, Dottie. I've been alone here with Bob for several minutes, and I must say he's been a perfect gentleman.
Never took my gloves off once, you see?
Well, he knows you're a big newspaper woman, Lolly. He'd be afraid to get romantic with you.
I don't see why. You know I don't have to print everything that happens.
We're cooking. Say, what causes this fatal charm I have for women lately?
The manpower shortage.
She's just kidding, Lolly. She really goes for me. You know, we have adjoining dressing rooms at Paramount.
Well, that sounds romantic.
Romantic is right. You know what she did the other morning? She kept rapping on the wall to attract my attention.
Rapping? Nothing. I was driving a plug in that peephole you drilled.
That's just silly. I haven't even got a drill in my room.
Then your nose must be sharper than it looks.
Oh.
Now, if you two lovebirds will excuse me, I think I'll go out and gather some news.
Okay, Lolly, I'll stay here and try to gather Dottie.
Happy little gathering, isn't it? So long, Lolly.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Lolly. Well, Dottie, here we are alone. What are you thinking of?
I'm thinking of a song.
What song, Dottie?
Don't Fence Me In.
Well, Dottie, I'm really glad you came down. You see, I want you to pose for some pictures of G.I. Journal.
I'm always willing to watch the birdie for the boys overseas. Go ahead and take the pictures.
But, Dottie, you out of your mind? You'd be embarrassed to tears if you posed with all those clothes on.
Well, what do you suggest?
Well, I have a very novel idea. I thought I could get a picture of you in a strapless tea bag.
No, I don't think that's any good, Bob.
All right, then we'll put you in a bathing suit.
But I didn't bring a bathing suit with me.
That's all right. I have one of mine here. Go behind the screen and put it on.
But, Bob, I couldn't pose in your bathing suit.
Don't worry. It's a two-piecer. Three, counting the leggings.
Gee, where in the world did you get this suit?
Oh, it's a suit I wore years ago when I was a lifeguard.
Years ago is right. It says Coney Island, 1898.
1898 was my locker number. Say, I was some lifeguard. I was some lifeguard. Yes, sir, I was. Yes,
sir, you sure were old boy.
Many a day I'd be sitting on the beach, a girl would yell for help, and I'd run out and grab her.
And she'd really yell for help. Oh, well. Anything for G.I. Journal. Where's the screen?
Right there. Just step behind it and change your clothes. Say, why are you staring at it? What are you looking for?
Nose holes.
Nobody trusts me. Go ahead, Dottie. And while you're back there changing into my bathing suit, here's some mail that's been collecting for you. They want you to sing.
Behind the screen?
Who knows? It might start a new trend.
Okay. Don't any of you fellas look. Now, just listen. I'd like to beam this to all you G.I. Journal subscribers, but in particular to Law, Don, Frank, Ted, and Bob at APO 557. Art Beckman at 980. Sergeant Billy Brooks, Joe Zoglio, and to that APO 464 gang, including Earl Johnson. Also the boys in Barracks 24 at Station 365. Hiya, Murph. And to that certain T4 who wrote us that swell report on the 103rd.
Dreams at night, it could happen tonight. like an eye on spring. Run when church bells ring.
That was nice dedicating. I'll see you later. I've got to get back to the city desk. Well, all I need now is the right photographer to get those shots of Dottie L'Amour. I want some real artistic shots. They can't be taken by just a guy with a camera. He's got to be a man with the soul of a painter, a poet, a genius to his fingertips. A man that...
Hello.
This episode of G.I. Journal is from January 12th, 1945. And has Fibber McGee and Molly.
The G.I. Journal goes to press. Yes, sir, it's the G.I. Journal, the radio newspaper of the AEF. And tonight we give you not one editor-in-chief, not two editors, but Fibber McGee and Molly and Frank Sinatra.
Well, I can understand you acting as editor-in-chief, Mr. Sinatra, but I'm afraid McGee doesn't know much about newspaper work.
Now, wait a minute, Molly. I certainly do.
Do you really, Fibber?
Well, he does a little. He's been on the staff of life for years. Brad being the staff of life and him having so much crust.
Well, now, let me tell you, I wrote many of the headline in my day, let me tell you.
Have you anything for us to do until Miss Rogers comes, Mr. Sinatra?
Oh, yes, Molly. You might take this one ad down to the classified advertising department.
Which ad, Frankie? The one that says, reward for apprehension of my husband who took all my red coupons and blue?
No, this one that reads, personal. Young corporal with butane would like to meet beautiful young blonde with hot plate. Object, cooking with gas.
Who's going to cover that story out of the zoo where the mama bear had a blessed event?
Oh, one of our cub reporters. I'll take care of that right now.
Well, now that Mr. Sinatra's gone, dearie, I can ask. What on earth do you know about printing up a newspaper?
Well, that's a ridiculous question, Molly. I was turf editor for 7 years on the Starved Rock Bugle.
Turf editor? You covered the racetrack?
No, I just laid on the grass till it was time to come back with the yarn. But in 1933, I did get the Pulitzer Prize.
Heavenly days, you never told me that. How did you ever win the Pulitzer Prize?
Well, my brother had a pullet that wouldn't lay enough eggs, see?
Yeah.
So we were going to surprise it with a firecracker under the nest, see? But I didn't let go of it quick enough after I lit it, and I got the Pulitzer Prize. You get it, Molly? I says, I got the Pulitzer Prize.
Ain't funny, McGee.
I guess that firecracker worked on me. I'm laying the eggs.
Maybe Mr. Sinatra will put you to work on the comics. You know, that'd seem to be about your kind of work.
Come in.
Oh, it's Dr. Gamble.
Good afternoon, Mrs. McGee. And a cheery gastric twinge to you, bird brain.
Take a couple of loads off your feet, Doc. Pull up one of those type cases there and distribute it.
Thank you.
Say, Doctor, what do you think of us helping Mr. Sinatra edit the GI Journal?
I think it's an excellent idea, except for one little thing.
What's that?
You.
Now, just a darn minute, Gamble. You overstuffed epidemic promoter. One more remark like that, and I'll pull your nose so far down between your ankles you'll look like you're standing on a tripod.
Why, you varicose little vagrant. You couldn't pull a loose plug out of an oily wash basin without calling for the reserves.
Boys,
don't
please.
Worry, Mrs. McGee. I won't hurt him.
You can say that again, lard bucket. I'd go over you like a boot camp barber over a pair of sideburns on payday. I'd mop you up like the gravy on a chowhound's plate. Why?
That's loud talk for soft muscles, my boy. If you can staunch that drip of small talk a moment, I'd like to tell you about some material I brought for the GI Journal.
Material, Doc?
Well, it isn't much. Poetry.
Poetry?
That's right.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
I didn't know you could write poetry, Doctor.
Well, just a sideline with me.
Anything is a sideline with you except eating.
Now listen here, you thought off little runt.
Find the phone, Doc.
No wonder the little duckling wears on his face a frown. For he has just discovered his first pair of pants was down.
That's a lovely poem, Doctor.
Thanks a lot, Doctor. Just leave your name and address, and if anything turns up, it'll be the editor's nose.
I have one more.
Go ahead, Doctor.
All right. This one's sort of a rhyme in trend with the war.
Oh, yes.
A merchant marine on a tanker wed a mermaid one day while at anchor. He gets full of dismay when she's naughty and gay, because he can't figure out where to thank her.
Oh, my. They're lovely, Doctor, and we'll give them to Mr. Sinatra as soon as he comes back.
The reporter just got back from the zoo with another swell story. He overheard Mother Stork telling the little storks where baby storks come from.
Yeah? Where'd she tell them they come from?
Bing Crosby brings them.
That reminds me, Mr. Sinatra. Don't you sing, too?
Come on, son. Don't be bashful. Maybe I can turn some work your way down the Elks. Started many a young singer that way.
Will I ever find the girl in my mind? The one who is my ideal. Maybe she's a dream, and yet she might be.
Mr. Sinatra.
Sure was. Say, Molly, on your way to the composing room, tell that copy boy to get in here.
All right, dearie, I'll leave.
Oh, never mind. Here he is now.
Here's that new ad for the paper, Chiefy.
Okay, read it over, and Frankie and I'll check it for errors.
All righty. It says, "Men, do you find it difficult to sleep after 16 hours in the sack?" You do? Then try the new easy-to-swallow sleeping pill. Round pills roll too much. Our pill comes in a square shape so you can keep it on your stomach. Remember, spelled backwards is...
Okay, I got it. I'll run downstairs to the composing room and see what Molly's doing. I'll be right back. You take charge.
Okay, Fib. Ah, there goes a good kid. Well, I guess I better start... stashing the stuff before Ginger Rogers gets here. Come in.
Hi, mister.
Hi, small fry. Have a seat.
Thanks, mister. I'll just sit right here.
Whoops, not there. Oh, not there, sis. Oh, gosh, too late. Don't look now, but you just sat on yesterday's headlines.
Oh, gee, I did?
You sure did. Let me see. Turn around a minute.
Okay, mister. Did I get any on me?
I wouldn't say for sure, Teeny, but unless these old eyes deceive me, your little rompers have just bombed Tokyo again.
Is that bad, huh?
No, they deserve a little stern treatment.
McGee,
huh? He went downstairs a sec. He'll be right back. What'd you want with him?
Well, I wanted to tell him he could come over and chew on the trees in our yard anytime he wants to.
Well, what makes you think he cares for that?
My daddy.
Your father said Fibber would like to chew trees?
Sure he did, I betcha. He said Mr. McGee was a real eager beaver.
Well, I wouldn't say that, little one. His tail is much too broad for a beaver.
Say, I brought your paper a riddle for the soldiers, too.
Well, swell. Let's have it.
Riddle. Why is rabbit stew?
Why is rabbit stew?
Mm-hmm. Give up?
No, I think
you... You give up. A rabbit multiplies rapidly, but it isn't much of an adder. An adder is a snake. A snake has a rattle. So does a baby. A baby wears three-cornered pants. George Washington wore a three-cornered hat. Washington was head of the army. The army has mules. Mules have long ears. Rabbits, too.
And right here is the original song of the week department and your favorite G.I. Journal copy girl, Miss Connie Haynes.
Thanks a lot, fellas. You know, every week G.I. Journal presents a new song written overseas and mailed to us here at Armed Forces Radio, Los Angeles, USA. And believe me, we're really discovering some mighty talented tunesmiths in uniform. This week, we point with pride to a couple of Navy men, Tom Halsey and Bill Simmons, who collaborate with the Marine Corps, represented by Sergeant Vernon Ludwig, to write Heaven, USA. And here it is right back at you, Tom, Bill, and Vernon.
Rolling rain and picture show.
well, Connie. And congratulations to Ludwig, Simons, and Halsey. Come in.
Hello, everybody.
Why, just arrived. Come right in and make an imprint on that chair there, dearest. You know Fibber and Molly?
Yes. I'm very glad to meet you.
How do you do, I'm sure.
You're any relation to Buck Rogers back in Peoria, sis? Real nice guy, Buck. He was the finest lad that ever...
No, I don't think I... No, in fact, I don't think I've ever been in Peoria.
Oh, you haven't?
Mm-mm.
Then I take back what I said about Buck. There was a low-down bomb...
Anyway, dearie, you know who Miss Rogers is.
Oh, sure. Everybody knows who she is.
Oh, they do?
Sure. You're the gal who won that Charleston contest.
What brings you to the old G.I.J., Ginger?
Well, I thought you might be able to use an article on dancing.
That we can, that we can.
I'm glad to use it, sis. Pretty interested in dancing myself. In fact, I was quite a fancy stepper at one time, to put it mildly. I do say so myself, but I shouldn't. Remember how I used to turkey trot, Molly?
Oh, yes, indeed. And I remember the feeling of Thanksgiving when you sat down.
Well, this article of yours, Ginger, what is its nomenclature?
I thought I might write something else about the present trend for jitterbugging.
Jitterbugging?
Yes, you know, that's where one hip is restricted to quarters while the other one goes out on extended maneuvers.
It's great exercise, too, McGee.
Any form of dancing is great exercise. I even lost 5 pounds off my frame doing the bunny hug.
I wouldn't say you'd lost it, Mr. McGee. If you look closely enough, you'll see that it's just slipped its moorings.
Who says?
Me too. Well, gee, sis, it hurts me to hear you say things like that, especially when you remember that I saw you in your last movie and enjoyed you very much.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. McGee. I was just trying to be funny. I saw your last movie, too.
Honest?
Yes, and I happen to have some very confidential news for you.
Yeah, yeah, go on.
Rumor has it that your acting performance has put you in line for a very famous award.
You mean the Academy's Oscar?
No, Maggie's Drawers.
Well, look, sis, this ain't getting that dancing article you were talking about.
Oh, you're right, Deborah. I think I can demonstrate it if I have a partner.
Okay, sis.
Come here, Frankie.
And then me?
Go ahead, Mr. Sinatra. You're not afraid of girls, are you?
Well, no, not if they don't wear bobby socks.
All right, now you put your arm around me, and I put my arm around you, and... Say, you have a very solid chest, just like a board. How do you do it?
I use a board. Hey, that's pretty good, eh? I think I ought to be a comedian, huh?
Oh, don't give up being a singer now that you're so near. Now then, move slowly around the floor.
Ah, this is a cinch. How am I doing?
Fine. Now, try it standing up.
Is this better?
It's stiff.
That's fine, Frankie. In this step, you should put your weight on the toes, not mine.
That's on the account of he's not relaxed enough.
Hey, you got the idea, but hadn't you better shift into low?
You just can't dance all tightened up like that. Why, a sailor's pants aren't that tight.
Look here, Fibber, why don't you go somewhere and wax the floor?
Look, Fibber, you've been so helpful coaching us. I've got a little solo step I'd like you to try. Are you willing?
Oh, you betcha, sis. Didn't call me the Peoria Pavlov for nothing.
Fine, now first you put your arms out straight.
Uh-huh.
Next, raise your left leg in the air and touch your left hand. What was that?
I think I stripped the gear.
Now, hold your leg up there.
Both of them?
Now, wait. You haven't come to that yet. Now, raise your other leg and touch your right hand and hold it. Stop it. Now, while Fibber's up in the air, I can give you a real article for the G.I. Journal to run, Frankie. It's about the Signal Corps.
You mean those guys who wig-wag their eyes at blondes?
Mm-mm. That's not all they do. In a war like this, where men and machines move at terrific speed on the ground and in the air, it's important that vital information be dispatched at an even faster speed. And it's important, too, that this information be withheld from the enemy.
These two requirements of secrecy and speed are the guiding principles of the Signal Corps, which provides the equipment and men for the Army's lifeline of communication. Without the Signal Corps, not a plane could fly, not a tank could move, not a gun could blast. No order, no plan. There'd be no battle and no victory. Let the other side fight their war of nerves. We'll put our faith on the nerves of war, our Signal Corps.
Well, that's swell article, Ginger. Especially since the Signal Corps has just voted you the movie star they'd like most to flag down.
Really? Well, that's quite an honor. Oh, Feather, you can come down now.
Thanks, Sid. It's a swell dancing lesson for dropping in on the G.I. Journal. Now, while Fibber recovers, I think maybe you'd like to dig a little group that's tough with Armed Forces radio listeners. The Les Paul Trio. Ride that guitar over here, Les Boy. Jump it. Swell, Les.
Come in. Well, it certainly would be a pleasure to I'm very glad to be here. I'm delighted to be here. How do you get out of here?
Haven't we met?
Oh, sure. You're a friend. Your name is Mr. Selene. Everybody swoons when you... How are the kids, Bang?
I've met this fella.
Oh, I'm a little bit private sad sack.
Well, we're very pleased to meet you, Mr. Sack. Your chest, too. How'd you get it?
Oh, for gallantry and extra for bravery under the fire, for wiping out the enemy machine gun, for extreme heroism above and beyond the talk, beyond our I won it in the crap game.
Well, what can we do for you, pal?
Well, I want your paper to print up a story of my life. See, I was the big boy.
Nobody give the stalk a shove.
Huh? Oh, well, I wrote it down. You read it.
Okay. It says here, Private Sad Sack was born in the little town of... As he lies cooing and gurgling in his little crib, his adoring mother tiptoes gently up to him and gazes lovingly at the little shaver. After a long look, she speaks rather softly.
Changed him.
Well, when he was 8, the sack achieved his greatest ambition. He became a tenderfoot in the Boy Scouts. His girl invited him to take a hike with her in the woods. And when they reached a cozy, secluded nook, she turned and whispered gently,
"Oh, Sack, let's stop here a while under these beautiful trees."
It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
Oh, Hey, boy, this is my big speech, my big speech, just what I've been waiting for, just what I've been waiting for. And now I can use my new Boy Scout axe.
The tank plays high school football. His team faces another big, tough bunch of men. The whistle blows and the game is on. The sack calls the signals.
Never been hurt yet.
The sack joins the army. He practices throwing dummy grenades until he is proficient. One day he gets a live grenade from his instructor, who warns...
Remember, sack, this is a real live grenade. It'll explode 5 seconds after you pull the pin. Be sure you throw it far enough away.
Oh, okay. I'll pull the pin. And now I'll throw it. Gee, look at it good, look at it good, this is sailing in the eye, look at it good, right where I wanted it to get, right where it will be, get it out of my car!
Called in to see a movie on the facts of life.
The sack
sits stunned at what he sees.
What do you know about that? Who'd have believed any. How do you like that? Talking picture.
While Quiver is recovering his composure, we might take a short thrust of Brother Bing's community sing. Here's a nod from APO 322 for a swell old-timer. I'll give the chorus a light going over to refresh your memory, and we'd like you all to join in the second round. It goes something like this.
Shine on, shine on, harvest moon, up in the sky. January, February, June, or July. Ain't no time to spoon. Outdoors and spoons, it's a great lyric. So shine on, shine on, harvest moon for me and my gal.
Now, here it is in your favorite key, the whole audience. Fibber, Molly, Ginger, Sack, Doc Gamble, and everybody everywhere. Latch on good and loud, and here we go.
Thank you.
Max, that was swell, gang. I haven't heard such wholehearted singing since the time Carmen Lobato got stuck with a check in Barney Dean's lunchroom. But before we lock up the presses of the night, I'd like to thank our G.I. Journal staff for their star reporting. Ginger Rogers, Arthur Q. Bryan, who plays Doc Gamble, Private Sad Sack, played by Mel Blanc, and the McGee's, Fibber and Molly. Fib, you and Molly got anything more to say?
Yeah. Good night.
Good night, all.
This is the Armed Forces Radio Service.
Here on this episode of G.I. Journal, which is from April 23rd, 1945, has the very funny Jack Benny and one of my favorites, Mel Blanc.
The G.I. Journal goes to press. Chief Jack Benny talking. So many people in my office. What? You want to place an ad in G.I. Journal? Wait till I get a pencil. Go ahead, miss. Young bashful girl wants to meet sailor back from the South Pacific who hasn't seen a woman in 3 years. Object. Okay, we'll print it right up. Now, where's my office boy?
Right here, Chief.
Hey, Radcliffe, how would you like to have lunch with me?
Oh, that would be swell, Mr. Benny. Where'll we go?
Go? Why should we go anywhere? You have a lunch box, haven't you? Well, get it open. You know, it isn't every day you get a chance to eat with the boss.
Well, I don't know what's in my lunch pail today. Let's see now.
Oh, boy. Spam sandwiches, Vienna sausage, and powdered eggs. A yum.
Yeah, leave it to my mom. She knows what's good.
What is your mom, a mess sergeant with a wax? Oh, well, it beats going out to eat. Say, I wonder what's keeping Rochester. He's supposed to be here with that sketch I'm doing with Paulette Goddard.
Paulette Goddard? Which Paulette Goddard?
Which Paulette Goddard? Well, do you think there's two of them?
There must be if one of them's working for you.
Look, I'm referring to the real Paulette Goddard, and she's going to do a very passionate love scene with me on my next overseas tour.
There's a girl that really knows there's a war going on.
Now, listen, Radcliffe, just because you don't think I'm attractive is no sign girls don't. And lay off the Vienna sausage. You've had your half. That must be Rochester now. Come in.
How do you do, Mr. Benny? My name is Arthur Treacher.
Arthur Treacher, what are you doing here?
Do you know the person named Rochester?
Why, yes, he's my butler.
Well, from now on, I shall have that dubious honor.
You're going to be my butler? What happened to Rochester?
As I gather it, sir, he's off for a 3 month vacation.
That's ridiculous. How can Rochester afford a vacation? He's only been working for me 9 years.
I don't know about that, sir, but the best thing you can do now is to come to terms with me.
Terms? Well, suppose you come down $20 a week, and I'll come up $20 a week.
Where shall we start, sir?
$20 a week.
Yes, but I should have to have much more than that, sir, I'm afraid.
Don't be afraid. We'll work the details out later. Now, here's the key to the house. You'd better get over there and get the place in order. Paulette Goddard is coming over.
Which Paulette Goddard?
There's only one. Now, get going. I'll see you as soon as I've set up the musical page. With four of the prettiest headlines that have ever been set up. The King Sisters.
Yes, sir, gang. It's the King Sisters with G.I. Journal's travel news. So all aboard on the Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe.
The G.I. Journal office and take you to Jack Benny's home in Beverly Hills.
Give me land, lots of land on the shore of Tiger Bowl. Don't fence me in.
I say, is that you, Rochester?
It ain't Paul, it does. Take yourself at home, Mr. Treacher. I'm just doing some last-minute packing. Let's see now. Where's that bottle of hair tonic?
Is this it on the dresser here?
Yeah, that's it.
90 proof. is this a good hair tonic?
Good. Use judiciously, it's sheer bliss. I wonder if I ought to take this sport jacket along. It fits me fine.
But Rossi says, isn't that Mr. Benny's jacket?
Yeah, but we never wear it at the same time. Well, I guess that about finishes tidying up his wardrobe closet.
Tidying his wardrobe closet? You haven't left enough in there to clothe a moth.
With my trouble, who can worry about naked moth?
Well, if I'd better take your place with Mr. Benny Rochester, there are a few things I feel I should know. For example, just what is his opinion of himself?
Well, that he's a kind man with baby blue eyes, about 36 years old, plays the violin beautifully, and is extremely generous.
And what is your opinion?
Accentuate the negative.
Now, Rochester, you know, there's another thing. Does Mr. Benny keep a well-stocked larder, or to put it simply, what is the nature of the provender hereabouts?
Repeatable civil play?
I mean, say, And how is the food?
Well, you've heard the song. You don't get bread with one meatball.
Yes.
Here you don't even get the meatball.
Well, of course, that won't bother me. I'm not much of a meatball fan. But I do hope I can have some fish and chips occasionally.
Oh, he'll throw you a fish occasionally, but you'll never be in the chips. Oh, by the way, you better take this.
What's that?
The key to the icebox. You better watch him, though. He keeps changing the lock. Oh, yes. And Mr. Benny's got some fine scotch I think you should know about.
Well, where does he keep it?
In the medicine chest. It's in 10 little bottles marked poison. And if you want a spot of good brandy, he's got some that's 30 years old.
Well, where is that?
Hot water bag.
Well, it looks like Mr. Benny's bathroom will be quite a popular rendezvous with me.
Yeah, but be sure and bring a nickel with you. The roller towel won't work. If Mr. Benny wants his hair combed, this is the drawer you go to.
I'll have a look if you don't mind. Quite a litter of wigs.
Oh, he's got 30 of them.
30 toupees?
Yeah, he puts a longer one on every day. By the end of the month, he pretends he's going to the barber shop, slaps number one on, and he's all set.
Well, thanks for the information, Roger, sir. I'll just go in and straighten up the living room a bit before Mr. Benny gets back. Have a nice vacation.
Thank you. I'll be leaving as soon as I pack this last little bag. Let's see. Where does he hide those cigars again?
This is Harry Mitchell cutting in from the G.I. Journal office with the latest musical news from our copy gal of song, Miss Connie Haynes.
There. This is Connie with the original song of the week, a new tune written overseas and mailed into G.I. Journal, Armed Forces Radio Service, Los Angeles, USA. The songwriter of the week is pharmacist mate Don Campbell, and his tune, as nice as its title, is called Meditation.
Connie Haynes, and congratulations to songwriter first class Don Campbell. Now back to G.I. Journal's editor-in-chief, Jack Benny, at his home in Beverly Hills.
A preacher,
Creek. Now, where is that valet? He's as bad as Rochester.
Did you call me, Mr. Benny?
Yes, preacher. Have you my clothes ready for tonight?
Yes, sir. I've laid out your suit, shirt, and hair.
Oh, yes. I hope you put the curly one out. I feel so young tonight. Gosh, I can hardly wait to start rehearsing with Paulette. In this sketch, I play the part of a young colonel. What are you laughing about?
Well, I can't see you as a young colonel, sir.
Why not?
Well, you've been on the cob too long.
That's the way it should be in this country. I mean, that gag is off the cob, too. But Paulette will be here any moment. I got to find something to wear. Something that'll make me look youthful. Yes. Say, what do you know? Here's my old turtleneck sweater.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'll put that on.
Yes?
Boola, 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 boola.
Did I get your beanie, sir?
Preacher, I'll let you in on a little secret. I'm just itching to get rid of you.
Well, don't scratch till you've paid me. Well, I'm going to get tea ready for Miss Goddard.
The help nowadays. Why did Rochester have to leave me? He was so loyal, so understanding. Say, maybe I could get him back. Where's the number of that club he's always hangs around? Oh, yes, here it is. Hardway 6-3320.
Hello, this is the curfew shall not ring tonight, social club.
Oh, is there a fellow there by the name of Rochester Van Jones?
Yes.
I'd like to speak to him. This is Jack Benny.
Just a minute.
Hello, Mr. Benny?
Hello, Rochester. Now listen, Rochie. This creature is driving me crazy.
Mr. Benny, shall we have crumpets with the tea?
Uh-oh. Yes, of course. Now, Rochester, I'm willing to let bygones be bygones. I'd like very much for you to come back to me.
Speak up, Mr. Benny. I can't hear you.
I can't talk very loud, Rochester. A creature's still snooping around. Gee, I wish you'd come back.
Well, frankly, Mr. Benny, the financial aspect of my association with you was getting gloomier and gloomier.
But Rochester, money isn't everything.
No, but it's a great buffer against poverty.
But Roch, even Shakespeare said, he who steals my purse steals trash.
Yeah, and he who finds your purse is a bird dog. And by the way, you still owe me 3 months back trash.
Oh, we'll iron that all out. Won't you come back?
I don't know. Labor depresses me.
I'm surprised you, Rochester. After all, hard work never killed anybody.
True enough. But resting is responsible for even fewer casualties.
Well, I'm not going to beg you. Uh-oh. Here he comes again.
Pardon me, but who are you talking to, Mr. Benny?
Oh, nobody, nobody. I mean, it's just an old girlfriend of mine, Agnes Grotch. Well, goodbye, Agnes.
Goodbye, Mabel.
After all I've done for that guy. Oh, there's the doorbell. It must be Paulette.
Shall I let her in, Mabel?
Well, Peter, I'll do it. I'm so anxious to see Paulette. I wonder what she'll say when she sees me in my turtleneck sweater.
Ah! A turtle!
Well, Paulette got her. I'm glad you could make it, Paulette. Gee, you know, every time I see you, it adds 10 years to my life.
Oh, now, Jack, I haven't seen you that often.
I was certainly looking forward to our dining together, Paulette.
Well, I don't like to disappoint you, Jack, but I didn't bring my dinner pail with me.
Please, Paulette, you're my guest. My man will serve something a little later on. Come on, let's sit by the fireplace.
All right. Now, just what is this sketch about that we're going to do?
Oh, business so soon? Well, in this playlet, you're a Red Cross nurse, and I play a colonel who was lost somewhere in France.
From the last war?
No, this war. It's a very good scene, Paulette. When the curtain goes up, I have just flown a very important message from headquarters back to my home base. As soon as I land, I grab you in my arms.
Don't you even untie the message from your leg?
Look, I'm not a pigeon. I'm a pilot. Let's not talk about the play now. Look how pretty the fire is. The firelight just seems to dance over your face. Is the dancing on mine?
Yes, it's the first time I ever saw the Palladium with blue eyes.
They are, aren't they? Oh, I could sit here forever. It's so nice, Paulette, to have you running your fingers through my hair.
Oh, yes. It is nice. And with your hair, it only takes one finger. I think we'd better start rehearsing, Jack.
Well, not yet. I thought we'd pop some corn first. Huh?
Oh.
Or have we been popping it, huh?
Oh, no. Let's rehearse.
Oh, all right. We'll rehearse the scene where I grab you in my arms.
You win. Flip me some corn, Pop.
And here are G.I. Journal's four-star vocal reporters for this week's request page. The King Sisters, Alice, Donna, Yvonne, and Louise, with a song for the 11th Airborne.
Sometimes I wonder why I spend the lonely night dreaming of a song, a melody that always haunts my
popcorn's all gone, Paulette. Let's get started with our little love scene, shall we?
All right.
And remember, Paulette, this is very romantic. So when we go into a clinch, really give me something. Have you got it?
I've got it, but can you take it?
Oh, sure. Hand me my vitamin pill, sweetheart.
Here you are, sir. And happy landing, Colonel.
What a louse.
Oh, now, Jack, don't take too many vitamins. After all, I'm just a helpless little girl.
You are? These are the noisiest pills. Well, let's go.
Jack, let go of me. Why, you mad, impulsive boy.
Josh, I'm a mad, impulsive boy, and you're a helpless little girl. Wow, aren't you excited, Paulette?
Well, no.
I'm not getting much of a buzz myself, sir.
You're not supposed to get anything. Just keep still and give me some more pills.
Here you are, sir. Good shooting.
Back. Now... a young army colonel separated from my outfit. You're the beautiful nurse I find in a deserted farmhouse. Suddenly I recognize you as my childhood sweetheart, and the reunion is very tender. I fall into your arms.
Well, now, wait a minute. The script says that I fall into your arms.
I know. I changed that. You see, in a love scene, I like to keep my hands free. You know, to make gestures.
Just watch him, that's all.
Oh, I will. Now, as the scene opens, the young colonel, that's me, enters the farmhouse. I open the door. I must get a detachment of Seabees over here to oil that door. Ah, thank goodness I found this deserted farmhouse. I shall rest my weary bones.
So this farmhouse isn't exactly deserted, Colonel, sir.
Oh, then the heck with my weary bones. Why, it's a nurse.
Yes, sit down and we'll rip open a Band-Aid.
Say, isn't your name Minnie Glogenhager?
Yes. Well, isn't your name Herman Huckledinker?
Yeah. Gosh, imagine finding a Glogenhager way over here.
And who would have ever thought that I would bump into a Huckledinker?
It's a small world, Minnie.
Gee, I'm thirsty.
Well, I saw a cow when I came in. Creature, you be the cow.
Very well. Moo, sir.
Don't be such a cultured cow. Just move. That's it. Oh, that's the door. What can that be?
Oh, that must be the technical expert the army is sending over to teach you how to act like an officer.
Oh, good. Let him in.
Excuse me, pardon me, is this the home of Jack B? Mr. B, does Jack B, does Jack B, are you the Grey Goose of Waukegan?
I'm Jack Benny, if that's what you mean. Who are you?
Well, I'm the Colonel Major Captain Loot, Private Sad Sack.
The sad sack. How'd you happen to become an army technical expert?
Well, you see, the general, my commanding officer, the officer, they cut the wrong orders.
Here, I'd like to ask you a question. What sort of entertainment do you think the enlisted men overseas like best?
Oh, well, they like moving the radio. They like radio program. They like that gamma. They like to play check. They like dames.
Girls, eh? Well, don't you think the boys would like to see me?
Oh, yes. They think you're very fun. They think you're quite a comic. They think you're very amused. But bring a dame.
Well, it just happens that Miss Paulette Goddard is going with me.
Paulette Goddard? You can stay home.
You look a little tired, Jackie. Now you come over here and sit next to me.
I'll be glad to.
Now, just a minute, Paulette. We've got to get on with this play. Here's the place where I take you in my arms and kiss you.
All right, come on, let's get it over with.
Oh, gee, I could do a bit better than that. I can come here, babe.
Oh, Jackie, you great, big, handsome beast. Kiss me.
Paulette! Frank, listen, Frank!
I'm a colonel this way. You listen to an order. About face. Turn around. Right. All right. Back. To the train, sir. Do something.
Move.
All right. Stop. Oh, well, we're a little late. Good night, folks. Gang?
Yeah, I got a horse there. I see that 30 for tonight. But before we close this edition of G.I. Journal, I want to thank our star reporters, Paulette Goddard, Arthur Treacher, Rochester, the King Sisters, Connie Haynes, Dick Aron, and Private Sad Sack Mel Blanc. This is Jack Benny saying, so long, Ben.
This is the Armed Forces Radio Service.
Now we're going to get into a little cloak and dagger. And this episode is from May 28th, 1950, episode 3, The Trojan Horse.
Are you willing to undertake a dangerous mission behind the enemy lines, knowing you may never return alive?
What you have just heard is the question asked during the war to agents of the OSS. Ordinary citizens who to this question answered, yes.
This is Cloak and Dagger.
Black warfare, espionage, international intrigue. These are the weapons of the OSS. Today's story, The Trojan Horse, is suggested by actual incidents recorded in the Washington files of the Office of Strategic Services. A story that can now be told.
August 1942. Report to OSS headquarters in Casablanca from Agent Henri Fontaine in France. Contact with girl Gabrielle Monet was made in the Bluebeard Cafe in Paris. I went there alone on the evening of the 15th and sent her a note with a waiter asking her to come to my table when she'd finished her song. Then I sat and waited. German officers were spread about the room as they were spread about all of occupied France. I wondered what they would say if they knew why I had come.
Mr. Felty is here. Encore, Fräulein, encore.
You send me this note, huh?
Oui, mademoiselle. Will you join me?
Why not? I drink with anyone these days.
What will you have, eh?
What have you? Let me taste from your glass.
It is very bad wine.
Huh? You are right. Oh, the only time a girl may get good wine nowadays is when she drinks with the Bosch. Never mind, I'm not thirsty.
I enjoyed your song.
Is that what you wanted to tell me?
I think you are wasting your time here in Paris.
Ah, Paris is wasting our time on Paris these days.
I can offer you a better position in Casablanca.
What did you say? Who are you?
My name is Henri Fontaine. I, too, have a good position with the American OSS in North Africa.
What are you saying?
Before the Germans came to France, I was a poor poet. They did me a service. Now I'm a rich spy.
You sit here in a room full of Germans and tell me this? What makes you think I will believe you? What makes you think I won't turn you over to the Germans if I do, huh?
Mademoiselle, I am not such a brave man. Neither am I a fool. We have kept you under observation for months. We know you better than you know yourself. Is there anything you'd like to know about yourself?
What do you want of me?
On our side, we have only the very best. Forgerers, counterfeiters, cutthroats, and spies. Will you join us?
Just tell me what you want me to do.
Agent Henri Fontaine in France to Agent Steve Lytle in Casablanca. Arrangements have been made to transport the girl Gabrielle Monet to the south of France and then to Casablanca. Awaiting further instructions. Over.
Bonjour.
The roses will bloom early this year, I think.
Oui, but not too early, I hope.
Good, good. I've been waiting for you. It is dark. I can't see you well. Is the girl with you?
She is here. Gabby, say something so our friend will know you are here.
I am tired.
Did you have difficulty reaching Marseille from Paris?
Not too much. With swarms of displaced persons all over France to mingle with, and a slight bit of help along the way from the underground, it was not too bad.
Good, good. Now follow me. I will take you to the fishing schooner.
But
I know you're tired. Cheer up, Gabby. You'll have a nice long trip by water to rest up.
Oh?
And then another nice long trip by auto to Casablanca.
Oh, I like automobiles. In the old days, I liked nothing better than a pleasant ride.
But Gabi did not like the automobile trip to Casablanca. It was probably nothing like the old days. I drove up front alone while she was fitted in the trunk of the car behind gasoline drums. There were gunny sacks in a Moroccan rug thrown over her. Across everything, a heavy canvas cover lashed down with just enough air left for her to breathe. We drove that way over rough roads for several hours. When it got dark, I pulled over to a side lane and let her out. Gabby, come out, come out.
Oh, my back. It is broken.
I will gladly massage it for you.
You are too kind.
Not at all.
No, thank you.
Pity.
Why did we stop?
To give you a chance to stretch your legs. And a cigarette, if you want one.
Oh, I would die for one. Give.
I have one lit here.
Mille merci.
You see? I try to be gentle. I try to make up for the inconvenience I am causing you.
Ça c'est drôle.
I remember what another poet once said. A German, by the way, but not a Nazi. His name was Goethe.
What did he say?
He said, be gentle with women. Remember, they were made from a broken rib.
I am not amused.
I'm sorry.
You are always smiling. Do you enjoy the war, huh?
I am a poet. There is poetic excitement in being behind the lines, working underground. I enjoy being a spy.
Well, I am no matter hurry.
You will do.
You still have told me nothing. Why did they send for me?
You remember a German named Paul Vogel?
Paul? What do you know of him? Tell me.
Not now. The time is late.
But I must
throw
know.
Away your cigarette.
Why did you mention
I said later. We have a long journey ahead. If we pass the border post, I will tell you. If we do not, the words and minutes would only be wasted.
Altalat! I thought I would never reach the border. It's been a long trip.
Where are you headed?
Casablanca.
Do you anything to declare?
No, nothing.
Let me see your passport.
Here you are. All of a sudden, I spotted a small black dog sniffing and whining at the trunk of the car where Gabrielle was hidden. The customs officer had not noticed him, and I knew I had to find some way to keep him from noticing.
One becomes stiff after so long a ride.
While he looked over my passport, I went to the rear of the car, picked up the dog by the scruff of the neck, and started to pet him.
Your passport seems to be in order, but what's the matter with Jeff?
Nothing. Perhaps he does not like to be picked up.
No. If he did, he wouldn't try to bite you. Better put him down.
I knew if I put Jeff down, he'd go back to sniffing around that trunk. I felt like strangling that cute little black puppy.
Well, put him down.
I have taken a fancy to him. How do you feel about selling him to me, eh?
Huh? Well, I... You are serious, monsieur?
Oui, I like him. Come, how much, eh?
Oh, take him. There are two more like him around somewhere.
Thank you. He will liven up the journey.
Wait. Huh? Before you go.
Yes?
What is in your trunk?
Huh?
I said, what is in your trunk?
Let me put the dog in the car, and then I will show you. The trunk. I will show you. You see? Gasoline drums.
Yes, I see. Very well. Close the trunk.
I may go?
Of course.
Thank you again for Joff.
August 27th, 1942. Report to OSS headquarters in Washington from Agent Steve Lytell in Casablanca. Fontaine and the girl arrived. I knew as soon as she walked in that Paul Vogel could not have forgotten her. I only hoped her memories of him weren't too strong. Now, as you know, Miss Monet, this is an international zone. We are, in effect, neutrals. In Casablanca, we pass each other in the streets. Germans, Americans, Vichy, and Free French. You can imagine what a hotbed of international intrigue we have here.
Oh, I know nothing of that kind of intrigue.
Then perhaps we can broaden your horizon.
Hold it, Henri. Now listen to me, Yabby. The head of the German Armistice Commission in Casablanca is a man named Paul Vogel. Does that name mean anything to you?
We knew each other once. Before the war.
Knew each other.
He was an attaché to the German consulate in Paris.
You almost married him once, isn't that so?
That is my business.
I'm afraid we've made it our business. Now, Gabby, we've kept close watch on you these past months, and we're sure that you're no Nazi or Vichy sympathizer.
Oh, I hate them all for what they are doing to France.
But Vogel, what are your feelings toward him?
Well, I haven't seen him in years.
That's not answering my question.
If he is a Nazi, I have no feelings toward him.
All right, then. Now, the open secret here in North Africa is the planned American invasion. The closed secret is where and when. Now, that's what Paul Vogel wants to find out for German headquarters.
Well, I still don't understand what I...
You're to tell him, chérie.
What?
Henri's right. You're to take up this friendship with him once more. Well, give him all the information he wants. You'll get it direct from us.
What?
Now, rest assured it'll be the wrong information. You understand now?
I'm beginning to.
Good. We have a job for you at the Three Lanterns Cafe. Now, starting tomorrow. Agent Henri Fontaine and I were at the Three Lanterns Cafe the next night when Gabrielle opened there. The cafe was packed, but even the crowd around the bar, officers with ribbon chests, waterfront riffraff, and black marketeers, all of them were quiet when she sang. She was wearing a red dress. In the spotlight, her face looked smaller and whiter, and her hair looked blacker. There wasn't a man in the room who could take his eyes off her. I wondered how soon it would be before Paul Vogel came in and saw her, too.
A girl like that could make you forget the war, right, Steve?
I've got a wife back in Syracuse.
Can she wear red like that?
My wife can be trusted. And this girl? She and Vogel were pretty close in the old days.
I know my own kind. She can be trusted.
I hope you're right. The success of the whole American invasion may hinge on it.
A lot depends on how hard Vogel falls for that little bait up there on the bandstand. Steve, Vogel, he's just come in.
That's all I wanted to see. Come on, let's get out of here.
Hey, excuse us. Pardon.
This table is free, waiter. It will do.
Oui, Vogel. You wish to see the wine list?
That girl. How long has she been here?
The singer, you mean? She started only tonight.
Tell her to come to this table when she's finished. You understand?
Oui, I understand.
No, you don't. You only think you do. Go tell her what I said and bring a bottle of your best wine.
Dear, it was you, Paul, when the waiter came to me. How like you to walk back into my life so quietly after making so violent an exit.
The world is small after all, Gabby.
I'm amazed to find you in Casablanca.
I can say the same of you. What are you doing here?
I arrived here a few days ago, but I've been in North Africa for months. Tangier, Oran, Tunis, singing.
How were you able to leave France after the occupation?
You should know how well I always got along with Germans.
You don't seem angry with me any longer, Liebchen. After that last time, 6 years ago.
Life is too short to be angry for too long at anyone. Besides, I was a fool to have been jealous over that silly blonde with the bad legs. I've even forgotten her name.
Suzanne.
Uh-huh. I see you have not forgotten.
Oh, it's a wine. Gabby, how good it is to be with you again.
How good it is to be with you, Paul.
For you? For me. Now, we will drink to what is to be, Liebchen.
What is to be?
You could have no better guide through Casablanca than I, Gabby. Come, what else would you like me to buy you from the marketplace? A scarf, perhaps? A gold scarf to put around your hair, yeah.
Have you taken many girls to the marketplace, huh?
Will you be forever jealous of me, Liebling? What is it, the French in you?
It is the woman in me. I imagine you are in great demand by the women here. The chief of the German Armistice Commission.
How did you know that?
I know more than you think.
Oh?
Would it interest you to know the name of one of the most important American agents in North Africa?
Who?
Steve Lytell.
What do you know of him?
I know him. And he knows the details of the planned American invasion.
Come. I will buy you a gold scarf.
Well, have you nothing to say of what I just told you?
I knew that already. I, too, have agents. However, thank you for telling me. I can promise you more than a gold scarf if you find out additional information for me. Is this possible?
It might be. very possible.
Agent Lytell in Casablanca to OSS in Washington. The girl, Gabrielle Monet, has been in the paid employ of the German government here for several weeks, according to our plan, and we'll transmit to them the Dakar cover project.
September 1942. Report to OSS headquarters from Agent Monet. I had a feeling that things were going too smoothly. I seemed to be holding my breath, waiting for something to go wrong. And on the night of the 29th, it did. Paul Vogel was in my room above the cafe. We were listening to my record of our favorite song.
Oh, Mama, avec tes doigts.
You'll have to go soon. It is late.
Forget the time. Who would think it would come to this again, Gabi? After that day in Paris, when we quarreled so.
Remember that day. Mm. We showed poor judgment to argue out of doors. It was raining. I got a terrible cold in the nose.
Oh, poor Gabi. Let me kiss that poor nose.
Oh, Paul, you really must go. But before you do, I have a paper for you in my purse. Dates when high officials will be in Casablanca.
Stay
I'll get
a
it
moment.
For you.
I want to talk to you.
You're hurting my arm. Let
Germany
me go, Paul.
Germany is paying you well for this information
know,
you are
Paul,
giving us.
Please.
Some of it is useful information, but none of it is as important as I would like.
I will try to do better.
You had better do better. You know what would happen, Gabi. If I found out you were crossing me.
I would not cross you.
It is nothing for me to twist your arm like this. Such a small arm. Think what I could do if I really tried to hurt you.
You hurt me now because you don't trust me. What do you want?
You claim to know this American like
that. I do.
You claim you get your information from him.
I
is
do.
That all he gives you? What about his love? Does he give you that too?
Paul. The shoe is on the other foot. Now it is you who are jealous. Oh, how foolish of you. Think, would I lie to you?
Gabi. Oh, Gabi. If you ever lie to me, I would rather see you dead at my feet than standing looking at me and lying. You hear what I say?
Yes. Yes, I hear. I hear.
More wine. I must keep my head clear to think of what you have just told me.
Now, are you satisfied that I'm earning my money?
Mm-hmm. Dakar. So the Americans will land in a few weeks at Dakar. Very likely. Very likely. Dakar is strategically important.
It will be more important if the German fleet is there to stop the invasion.
Yeah. That bungled attempt at a landing under de Gaulle's leadership failed, so the Americans probably figure we would not dream that they would try it again in the same place.
One American, Steve Lytell, does not dream you know all this. Mm. Are you going to tell German headquarters?
But of course, this is something they will want to know.
It, Steve. Every word of it.
Good.
The German fleet is being sent to stop the invasion at Dakar.
Good, Gabi. Good work.
Steve, radio report just in from Gibraltar.
What is it?
No, let me tell it, Geoff. General Clark will rendezvous on October 21st at point agreed near Alger.
You know what that means? Final preparations for the Iran invasion. Nothing must go wrong now. Nothing.
November 4, 1942. Something very wrong happened. Paul came to my room just before I was ready to go downstairs to the cafe. Paul!
Gabby, what? Your friend, Lytle, has been playing you for a fool. Do you hear what I say?
I don't understand.
The invasion is not the car. I just learned myself it's to be Oran. Oran! And the German fleet, on my suggestion, is waiting in Dakar for nothing.
Paul.
And will continue to wait for nothing.
Paul, it can't be.
Do you know what this will mean to me? Do you realize what the High Command will do to me for this?
Please, please, Paul.
My ruin.
Perhaps your latest information was wrong about Oran.
No. It all ties in. They, the Americans, wanted me to believe
Gabby, what had you to do with this?
Now what are you saying? I'm getting tired of your suspicions. One day you trust me, the next day you don't.
You're French? What kind of French?
Instead of questions, ask yourself this. Would I betray you, Paul? Not Germany, but you. Think. Look at me. Look at your Gabby and answer.
I... No, of course not. Not you. You wouldn't dare. There may still be time to stop the Americans at Oran. I must get back to headquarters and let them know by radio. I should have done that right away instead of coming here.
Oh, have a drink first.
No, later. I'll be back.
It will not be easy for you to tell the High Command this. A drink will fortify you. Yes.
Perhaps you're right. One drink, then.
Sat on the edge of the couch, his head in his hands. I remember thinking how very blonde was his hair, how large his hands. It was not difficult for me to drop half the L tablet from my purse into his glass as I poured the liquor over it. Here you are.
Thank you, Shane.
Poor Paul. Pauvre petit. You look so tired. Drink.
Where are you going?
To put on the record you like. We played it so often lately, Paul, that one of these days it will just rise up in protest. You're tired?
No, why should I be tired? I must go now. I've had my drink.
Hear my record through, then you will go.
No, now. I must go now. You're so good to me, Gabby. You love me. You love me very much.
His head had fallen on his arms and rested on the table. The tablet had begun to work as I knew it would. I got the automatic pistol that had been given to me by the Americans and shot him twice through his very blonde head.
Mon amour.
Report from Agent Gabriel Monet.
Mon amour.
Fini.
Mon amour.
Well, it ought to come any minute now, news of the invasion. I've had word that Eisenhower and Clark were in Gibraltar on November the 8th. I'll let you both know as soon as something comes through on the radio.
Are you all right, Demi?
Me, don't concern yourself.
You did what you had to do. It took courage.
Well, if I had thought about it longer, perhaps I would not have had the courage. You cannot know.
I think I do.
He meant a great deal to me. A long time ago. I killed him.
Listen to me. I told you something once that the poet Goethe said. He also said this. Give up what perished long ago. And let us love what's living. Do you hear, Gabby? Do you hear?
Écoutez, Yankee, Franklin, Midway, Lincoln, Robert, Harry. Robert,
that's
Harry.
It. That's it, the code name. Robert's arrived. The invasion's begun, do you hear?
Did you hear, Gabby? Did you?
Yes. Yes, yes, I heard.
Once again, the report of an OSS agent is closed with the words...
Mission accomplished.
A further adventure in black warfare is next week's...
Cloak and Dagger.
Heard in today's story were Jane White, Barry Kruger, Leon Janney, Joseph Julian, Carl Weber, Raymond Edward Johnson, Guy Sorrell, and Bernie Gould. Script was by Winifred Wolf. Music under the direction of John Gart. Today's true OSS adventure was based on the book Cloak and Dagger by Corey Ford and Alistair McBain. This has been a Lewis G. Cowan production under the supervision and direction of Sherman Marks. Stay tuned for the second big mystery, High Adventure, on NBC.
This episode of Cloak and Dagger was aired June 4th, 1950. It's episode 4, The Brenner Pass Story.
Are you willing to undertake a dangerous mission behind the enemy lines, knowing you may never return alive?
What you have just heard is the question asked during the war to agents of the OSS. Ordinary citizens who to this question answered, yes.
This is Cloak and Dagger.
Espionage, international intrigue. These are the weapons of the OSS. Today's story, The Brenner Pass, is the story of an American engineer who single-handed cut off the escape of part of the German army in Italy from onrushing American troops. The Brenner Pass is suggested by actual incidents recorded in the Washington files of the Office of Strategic Services. A story that can now be told.
No, padre, I don't want it.
Ecco, qualche cosa bere. Drink it. Drink this, figlio mio. It will warm your insides.
I want to talk to you. I want to tell you.
Drink this first. Buona, buona.
I'm so tired.
Rest then.
So tired.
Rest.
You won't give me away, will you? You'll hide me if the Germans come. Won't you, padre? Won't you?
You came to me, my son, because you knew I'd give you sanctuary. Any man has sanctuary in this house.
Yes,
I've taken an oath, filio mio. Anything you tell me, only God and I will witness. And if I had not taken this oath, I still would not give you away.
Thank you, father.
You are an American. That much you have told me. Do you want to tell me more, or do you want to sleep first?
No, no.
It is better you sleep first. I'll sit beside you. I won't leave you.
No. No, padre, I want to tell you. There may not be much time. I have a feeling that time is running out for me.
Yes, son.
My name was Donald Harper. I say was because... somehow, I don't feel as if I have a name anymore. When you're tracked down and hunted, you're not a human being. There's no past or future. There's just the present, and you run. So much has happened in a few weeks that it's hard for me to remember. Remember back from this morning when you found me unconscious on the steps of the chapel. Back to the morning I was sent on my mission. November 12th, 1944.
Captain Harper, I'm well aware of everything we have to gain if this scheme of yours succeeds.
You still think it's just a scheme, eh, Colonel?
I don't have to think. I know what your chances are of actually getting through to the Brenner Pass and blowing up that highway. And I know what'll happen to you if the Italian fascists or the German police get you.
I know a couple of things, too, Colonel. One of them is the country up there in the mountains.
Hmm?
Yes, I nearly broke my neck half a dozen times when I was a kid climbing the rocks around my grandmother's hut. And just before the war, I took a trip from the States to see her again. I skied over every inch of that mountain near the Brenner Pass. Colonel, I know I can do it.
We've been through this before, Harper. I'm aware of everything in your favor. Your knowledge of the country, the fact that you were an engineer before the war.
Just give me supplies, some TNT, an Italian uniform, and some phony papers in case I tangle with the fascisti. It's all I need, Colonel. I tell you, I can do it.
It's true. If that highway to the Brenner Pass could be destroyed, it would take the Germans months to repair it. It would cut off one of their retreats out of Germany.
Of course.
Now, we'd have them where we want them when the American armies advance. Their backs to the mountains and no way out.
That's it. That's it. Your permission, Colonel. Please let me try it.
You say your grandmother's hut is right near your objective?
Yes, sir.
I'll give you names to memorize of other partisans in the mountains who might help you on the way. I'll have all the supplies you requested, and you can leave.
From the beginning, Padre, I had bad luck. It snowed during most of the 40-mile journey, and it was difficult for me to move quickly. And the longer it took me, the more chance I had of being discovered. Then it came. You know what a storm is like here in the mountains, how it can blind you and throw you against the rocks. When it was all over, I realized what had happened. I had been thrown off my course. But that wasn't the worst of it. My knapsack was gone, all my supplies, and the packet with papers the OSS had forged for me. I had no identification now, and no food. But I still had the TNT for the highway near Ampezzo. There is a tavern, Padre, not far from Parola. It wasn't sheer recklessness, but desperation that made me go in there knowing I had no papers. Knowing the tavern catered to Nazis and fascisti. Knowing the rucksack on my back was filled with explosives. But there was no other place for miles, and I had to get food or I couldn't go on.
Come, Tony, tell us more of the story.
Oh, well, as I already told you, she was fat as prima donna.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, Mia, she was big. Yeah. Oh, she was like this. And look what she sang. When she sang, it looked like this. La, la, la.
See? What would you like to order?
Some bread and cheese, if you have it, and some coffee, black. Very strong, if you have it, please.
See?
Where is the beer I order? Bring it fast if you know what's good for you.
Yeah, see, fast. Bring it fast if you know what is good for you.
See, coming right away.
I tried to make myself as inconspicuous as possible.
Oh, you were terrible.
I hoped the Germans would continue to be amused by the Italian girl and not ask to see my papers. I had nearly frozen in the snow a half hour before. Now the sweat broke out all over my forehead. Pay attention to her, I kept praying. Watch her, watch her. Don't even look my way.
Here you are, signor. Cheese, bread, coffee.
Oh, grazie.
It is here. I have it here, right here.
Oh, that soldier must be important to be served first. Come here, soldier. Come over here and tell us how important you are.
Well, no, I'm not important at all. Forgive me. The waiter should have served you first.
That's right. He's not important. Come, take a sip of my beer, Tony. It will make it taste better.
No. Let the soldier have beer with us.
No.
Poor soldier. He's all alone.
Buongiorno. Come and have some beer with us, soldier.
No, grazie, signorina. I will just finish this coffee and then I must go.
Tony, forget him. Come back to work.
Wait a minute.
You must not be rude, soldier. Men are never rude to me. If I ask you to drink with us, you must.
No, no, please, signorina, some other time, perhaps. Now I must go.
Ha! You're afraid of me. Afraid of girls and afraid to drink beer. Oh, you should be back in your mama's lap, I think. I will give you some beer now. Perhaps you will acquire a taste for it. Here.
She threw it in my face. I felt it start to trickle down my neck, and I could hear the Germans laughing themselves sick. I wanted to snap that small neck of hers in half for making me the center of attraction. Grazie, waiter.
Very sure you're not followed here to my house.
Very sure, amico, and it's snowing again. Even the tracks from my snowshoes are covered.
We must be careful, very careful. All of us partisans. The Germans are closing in on us. Do you know what would happen if they found out I took you in? An American. This would happen.
But I tell you, there's nothing to worry about, and I'll be gone in the morning.
Ah, in the morning. One.
All I want is a night's rest.
There is a bed in the back room you may use, Senor Harper. You are sure you are not followed, very sure.
Yes, and I'll be gone in the morning before you're awake.
You must not think, Senor, that I am being inhospitable, but these times, they're very bad times for all of us.
Yes, I know.
To leave is important, too. Yes, in order to fight back later, one must leave now, no?
Yes.
And the Germans are clever. Very clever. If they knew you were here.
I was too tired to stand there and listen to the old man's whimpering. Too tired to watch his narrow eyes like small brown buttons dart about the room, looking first at the windows and then at the door, half expecting the Gestapo to come. All I wanted to do was sleep. I fell across the bed. But a few minutes later, I sat bolt upright, listening to the voices in the next room.
Daughter is here, an American in the back room, sleeping.
Are you sure? Are you sure he's an American, Father?
His name is Harper, Donald Harper, Tony. The American OSS sent him.
Oh, an American, eh? Oh, how the German police would like to know that.
That girl, the girl from the tavern, the friend of the Germans. I didn't stay to hear any more. There was a small door leading out to the back of the hut. I knew, Padre, that somehow I must have come to the wrong house. I didn't dare take any more chances and stop again until I reached my grandmother's. And I was so tired.
Donaldo mio. Donaldo, so good it is to see you again.
Oh, Nana.
Oh, but how you look, so thin, so tired.
Nothing changes here, does it? It could be 6 years ago or 10. Nana sitting here like this, in this house.
Ah, and your mama, your papa, how are they? Mail does not come here easily any longer. You have heard from them?
Yes, Nana, a few weeks ago. They're fine. They tried so hard to get you to America when the war came.
I would not go anywhere, Don Mio. This is my home.
No one could make me leave my home. Not the Germans, not the fascisti. Here I stay until the world rights itself again. Oh, but what can I get you? Sit, Comedy. Make yourself comfortable. You are hungry.
Yes, but I'm too tired to eat. I just want to sleep.
Do then. I'll make up the room for you later. For now, rest here on this couch. When you wake, I will have food for you. Like the old days, Caramio. My dear one. I will be in the kitchen. Sleep now. Sleep.
I don't know how long I slept. When I awoke, I wondered for a moment where I was. And then I saw her, standing over me.
Oh, how like a little boy you sleep. I've been watching you.
You? What are you doing here?
Watching you sleep. You don't drink beer, and you're afraid of girls, and you sleep like a little boy.
You followed me here. You brought them. What have you done with my grandmother?
What?
I'll kill you. Oh. I should have killed you then. I will now.
Stop. Stop it. You're hurting.
Friend of the Germans, you little she-devil. I'll kill you.
Donaldo. Donaldo. Here. What is going on?
Nana, you all right?
Of course I'm all right. What are you doing? Tony, what is wrong?
Oh, your grandson has his mother's hot Italian blood in his veins. He wants to kill me, that's all.
I'm ashamed of you, Donaldo. This girl, she's a friend.
Friend?
I will get the soup for you, Signora Apicella. Perhaps some soup will cool his temper.
But, Nana, I saw that girl with the German. She's...
Oh, she told me about that. She did not know who you were then.
Yes, but
she wondered why you disappeared from her father's house. She knew the name Donald Harper because she heard me speak of you often. So she came here after you.
Nana,
She saw you asleep. Then she understood why you had run away from her.
She was with Germans. I was there. I heard...
That girl, Donaldo, is the leader of our group of Parsons.
Your leader? But the Germans are...
Oh, the Germans. I amuse them. Porky, animali. I tell them funny stories and they laugh at me. Here's your soup. They do not hear me laugh when I get them drunk and they tell me things I can use to our advantage. Your soup. Drink it.
Tony, I'm sorry.
I understand. Che bella questa ragazza, Donaldo. No?
Yes, Nana, the girl is very pretty.
Oh, Signora Apicella, you embarrass me. Well, Donaldo, we are friends now. See?
See, Tony. Friends.
Too hard, caro mio. What are you doing?
Oh, drawing diagrams, Nana. I've got all the plans made to blow up that highway early tomorrow morning, and I want to make sure nothing goes wrong.
Here. I brought you something to eat.
Oh, you'll spoil me, Nana. Mm. But it was good to have you spoil me again these past few days.
Ah, how good it is to be able to. Will you leave then, tomorrow, after you do what you have to do?
Yes, I must, but I'll come back to say goodbye first.
Yeah. I come.
Ciao,
signorina.
Where is Donaldo?
Tony, what are you doing here?
Are you displeased to see me?
Where is that partisan friend you were going to send to help me?
Here.
What?
Me. I am the friend.
Oh, no.
I can do as good a job as any man. Let me help you, Donaldo.
No, it's crazy.
Please, let me do it.
Girl, it's crazy.
It is not crazy. Think what it will mean for me after you are gone from these mountains. Listening to my fat friends, the Germans, talk about the explosion. And to know secretly that it was I who helped to make it. Please. Donaldo. Mio.
Well, it's too late to get anyone else.
That's why I waited so long. The only man to get on this short notice is my papa, and he is a scared rabbit.
I was right the first time. You are a little she-devil.
Si. Take her with you, Donaldo.
All right, then. Pay attention to this diagram.
Si.
Now, there's a railway, as you know, going right over that highway.
If we plant enough TNT to blow that right onto the road, it'll be blocked up for months.
It was about 4 o'clock in the morning when we got to the highway and climbed up on the tracks of the railway. Tony stayed up above and I made my way slowly, slowly climbing down into the framework of the trestle, feeling my way along the girders. They were icy under my hands, and two or three times I almost slipped.
Careful! Careful, Donaldo.
It's all right. Watch yourself. Watch how you handle those explosives.
Do not trouble yourself about me. I told you I can work as well as any man.
Then work as quietly as one.
The troop train of Germans would be coming over the railway soon, and I had to finish before it came. I had a coil of wire around one arm and a pair of pliers hanging on a thong from my waist.
Tony, you hear me?
Yes, I hear you.
Well, hand me down those packages of explosives, one at a time.
Here? Here you are.
All right, thanks.
I shoved them in where I wanted them. Packed them close.
Tony, the wedges. Quickly, don't be so slow about it.
I'm doing it as fast as I can. There.
All right.
I lashed the grenade on top of the braced explosives, wound it tight with a wire, twisted it with pliers. Finally, I was finished. There was snow on the ground, and yet my shirt was wet with perspiration.
All right, last finishing touch. That does it for this side, Tony. Now let's get to the other side.
See? Give me your pliers before you drop them.
Okay.
There. Oh, I have helped you much this far. See?
See? You've helped me much.
Let me do it.
No, no. We haven't any time to argue. That train will be along any minute.
Please, please let me set off the explosion. Let me have that pleasure. I will follow your directions. I will do it just the way you told me.
No. The train, it's coming.
Just tell me when to pull it.
All right. You win. But heaven help you if you make a mistake. Hold it now. Steady. And don't pull on the wire yet.
Yes, I will pull it softly. Softly. Lightly. But firm.
Here she comes. Pull it!
Nana! Nana, it's done!
And I pulled the wire, Signor
Nana.
Abicella.
Nana, what is it?
It is nothing. These attacks. Come on, after.
Nana! Tony, some water, quick.
No, I will stay with her. Donaldo, you must leave quickly.
No, I'll stay. You go on.
This section will be swarming with soldiers after what we've just done.
And if they find you, they'll wonder what you're doing here.
Men do not know how to take care of the sick. I will stay and help you.
All right. Get the water.
You should not have stayed, Don Mio. I would have been all right.
All right, don't talk. Just rest.
Donaldo!
What is it?
Germans coming to this house. I can see from the window.
Oh, no. No, no, you should have gone before, not waited.
No, it's all right.
Donaldo, do this one thing more for me.
I won't leave while you hold them off for me. Is that what you want?
I know them. I am a favorite of theirs. Please, caro mio, you can escape and do more important work. And I will not be harmed if I stay behind.
She's right, my son. Escape. Escape. There is still time. The girl knows them.
Upstairs. Upstairs. They may be around the back, too, so go upstairs. Jump from the window to the roof of the barn. You can make it from there.
No, Tony.
Go, 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 I say. Promise not to turn back. Promise.
Ran up the stairs to the tiny attic. I heard the door close downstairs, so I knew they had come in. I could distinguish their voices, too, although I couldn't hear a word they were saying. I opened the window and saw it was an easy jump to the roof. Then Tony screamed. And I forgot my promise to her and went back. Flattened myself against the wall at the head of the staircase.
No, no, no. I have done nothing, but I came here to take care of this poor old lady.
Well,
can you not see that she's ill? Give her another taste of the stick. Oh, please, let the girl alone, please. Let another taste of the stick is what she needs. Signorina.
The Marconi,
you are always around when there's trouble. Trouble and
talk. Asha, beat
the truth out.
Oh, let her alone, I beg of you. Don't hold her. No, 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 go back.
Bosses, must.
I surprised the first German when I jumped him, brought the butt of my gun down on his head again and again. But the other German was not so simple a matter.
Leo!
He had my shoulders pinned down, and I couldn't move. Then I saw Tony standing over us, a heavy candelabrum in her hands. Good work, Tony. Now listen to me carefully, Tony. Take my grandmother back to your house. No one will know you were here. If others question you, tell them my grandmother was here alone when someone, a stranger, took refuge here and killed the officers who came. Then she went to your house because she was afraid. Will you remember that, all of it?
Will you be back? Will I ever see you again?
Who knows? Perhaps. Perhaps. Carlina. Carlina, my dear little Tony. Now go. Go quickly. She did.
I wanted to tell you, Padre, that's everything that's in my way here. You will hide me.
Rest easy.
If they come, you...
I will do what I can for you.
What right have you coming in like this, breaking down the door?
Do not make trouble, Padre, I warn you.
No, no, this is the house of God.
It's all right, Padre. It's all right.
No, 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 you're mistaken. My name is not Donald Harper. I'm an Italian soldier. I was lost in the snow. My papers are gone.
Come, this is tiresome. Admit it. You are the American who blew up the highway. Answer.
You are mistaken, Herr Hauptmann. You are mistaken.
We will see. Sergeant, send in the old man.
Yeah, Herr Hauptmann. In there with you.
See.
Hauptmann, in there with you.
See. See, I come.
You recognize him, I see. Excellency, Mayor, what is this man's name? Be high step.
Harper, Donald Harper, the senor is an American. Now I have told you, you will let us alone, see?
You have talked enough, go now.
You will leave my daughter and me alone, and the old lady too, now that I have told you. We have nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
But you will not tell my daughter. You promise, remember. She has a soft heart, it would distress her.
Take him away, guard.
You will let us alone
come
now,
on,
see?
Come.
See, we are on your side, loyal fascisti.
You have nothing to say.
Everything has been said for me.
That highway has been completely destroyed.
I'm delighted to hear it.
That many loyal soldiers as the Reich have been killed.
Well, thank you for telling me.
And what is more, you are in Italian uniform. A spy. Bullets are too good to waste on you, American. But a rope can be used again. Sergeant!
Ja, Herr Hauptmann?
Take this man out and hang him.
I cannot do this.
You will do as you are told, Herr Doctor. Here is the death certificate of the American who was hanged this morning. Sign it.
And the cause of death you want that I should write?
As I told you. Just as I told you. Heart failure. A pity. Some weeks later, two retreating German battalions found their escape through the Brenner Pass blocked. Captain Harper had done his job well, and the onrushing American troops caught the enemy with their backs to a mountain. Though Donald Harper did not live to see victory, he shared in it. And once again, the record of an OSS agent closes with the words,
"Mission accomplished."
A further adventure in black warfare is next week's.
Cloak and Dagger.
Heard in today's Cloak and Dagger adventure were Everett Sloan, Hester Sondergaard, Barry Kroger, Louis Sorin, Virginia Payne, Raymond Edward Johnson, Carl Weber, and Boris Aplin. Script was by Winifred Wolfe. Music was under the direction of John Gart. Today's true OSS adventure was based on the book Cloak and Dagger by Corey Ford and Alistair McBain. This has been a Lewis G. Cowan production, in association with Alfred Hollander, and was under the direction and supervision of Sherman Marks. Stay tuned for the second big mystery, High Adventure, on NBC.
And this last episode of Cloak and Dagger was aired on July 30th, 1950. It's episode 12, Swastika on the Windmill.
Are you willing to undertake a dangerous mission behind the enemy lines, knowing you may never return alive?
What you have just heard is the question asked during the war to agents of the OSS, ordinary citizens who to this question answered, yes.
This is Cloak and Dagger.
Warfare, espionage, international intrigue. These are the weapons of the OSS. In today's adventure, the swastika on the windmill, the role of Paul Halfond, an OSS agent in Holland, is played by Les Tremaine. The story is suggested by actual incidents recorded in the Washington files of the Office of Strategic Services. A story that can now be told.
My mouth was as dry as ashes. The palms of my hands were wringing wet. My revolver was drawn, and I moved slowly, slowly along the dark hall. Everything I had been taught led up to this moment. Boards under my feet teetered. For a terrifying moment, I almost lost my balance and fell backwards. Something was ahead of me. In a room along that dark passage, I sensed it more than anything else. Then I heard it.
Come here, Feldwebel.
I stopped breathing until I passed that room and the voices of the hidden Germans almost slid past them to the end of the corridor.
Halt! Halt, Amerikanischer!
There was a Nazi stormtrooper in uniform right in front of me, blocking the exit. Well, fire! Fire! Fire again!
Good work, Paul. Well, that's it. You passed the test. Now the colonel wants to see you.
What I had just come through was a cleverly designed scare house that rivaled any Coney Island chamber of horrors for one-a-minute thrills. This was part of the training of an OSS agent, and it took place less than an hour's ride from Washington, D.C.
Lieutenant Halfond, at the present time, we have no information, and no way of getting information, on the disposition and plans of German troops in the Netherlands. We think they're up to something. We want to know what. Now, you'll be flown to England, and from there, a submarine will take you to the coast of Holland.
The coast of Holland? To me, Holland was that little country where my Uncle Bram lived, where I visited when I was 12, where the windmills were now under the shadow of the swastika.
I guess we can surface about here. There's Mac on Holland. I want to take a look, Lieutenant Halfond?
Oh, thanks, Commander Spurling. Through the periscope of the submarine tuner, I could see a windmill in the flat lowland of the Netherlands. I couldn't see the swastika, but I knew it was there. The pressure gauge showed 20 feet of salt water above us.
Take her up!
Take her up! Surface!
Open the hatch!
We climbed the ladder through the hatch, where an inflated rubber boat was waiting to take me to shore. I'm only a couple of yards from shore. I can get out here. Hand me that rucksack, please.
Here you are, sir. Have you far to go from here?
It's only about 5 miles from Macum to Bolsward, where my uncle lives. I can make it before the sun comes up. Goodbye. And thanks.
Good luck. Good luck, sir.
So when you rang the bell at San Paul, I jumped from my bed. The devil, I said. It's the Gestapo. They finally put two and two together and connected me with the underground.
Hush, Brom, hush. God gave you a tongue. Must you use it so loosely?
I'm afraid my new Aunt Hilda doesn't trust me completely.
I trust no one these days.
Oh, Hilda, Hilda, this is Paul. How often have I spoken to you of the times he came here when he was... How old, Paul?
12, Uncle Brom.
Ah, yes, 12. And so proper, so correct. A miniature model of propriety. Well, from the looks of it, you've grown, but you haven't changed much. Still proper as the devil.
The result of my strict Quaker upbringing, Uncle Brom, remember? We were both taught never to drink or smoke or lie or swear, Uncle Brom.
Yes.
How long will you stay in Holland?
Only long enough to contact the leader of the underground and get the information I'm after.
I see. Tell me, why should we believe that you are an Allied spy?
Hilda!
Answer me.
Surely you don't expect me to carry proof about me that I'm a spy in case the Germans find me.
Then how do we know?
That's enough, Hilda. The devil, I say. I'll hear no more of this talk.
All right, Brom. It will be as you say, and on your conscience.
Your wife doesn't trust me.
You were surprised, no doubt, to find your Aunt Katrina dead and... I remarried?
Yes, yes, I was, Uncle Brom.
I was lonesome. It's not good for a man to live by himself. And she is a good woman.
But she doesn't trust me.
She has her reasons. There was a man in these parts not long ago. He passed himself off as a British agent, gained the confidence of some of the underground. Then he turned them over to the Gestapo.
Oh, I see.
Hilda's family was among those executed. You understand now?
Uncle Brom, you haven't seen me nor heard from me since I was a boy. You don't know where I've been during those years in between. You don't know what my loyalties are. Do you trust me?
Tomorrow I will take steps to put you in contact with Hans Bock in Luaden, a leader of the Dutch underground.
When I awoke a few hours later, it was about 10 o'clock. Through the window of the spare room that Aunt Hilda had made up for me, I could see the neat little milk carts jolting over the Keisteenen cobblestones, and I could see the endless stream of bicycles. And here and there, a German soldier in uniform, like a blot on the landscape.
I'm afraid the breakfast is not as sumptuous as it was in the old days, Paul.
Do not apologize for what we cannot change.
Aunt Hilda is right. It was very good. The Rogerbrood was just as I remembered it. And these currant buns, these Krentenbrudjes, are wonderful.
I will leave you. I have a house to clean.
You're still suspicious of me?
Have I any reason not to be?
Hilda, enough. Paul is my sister's son. I will stake my own life's blood that he is to be trusted.
Let us hope you do not have to.
Hilda!
Aunt Hilda. Look. This pistol. I'm giving it to you. It's the only one I have.
The only one you have? And you give it to me?
Yeah. I put myself at your mercy. If at any time you have proof, even the slightest, that I'm not what I claim to be, take my own gun and turn it on me.
I will take your gun and take you at your word.
That should convince her, Paul. You are what you say.
I hope so. Now, what about this Hans Buck? How can I get in touch with him?
I will arrange for a meeting between you halfway at the Harlingen, 5 days from now, to give him time to collect the information you are after.
The days until Thursday, when I was supposed to meet Hans Buck, passed slowly, but they weren't wasted. I set up the shortwave radio in the wine cellarette in the living room. I had long talks with Uncle Brum, and I went out of my way to win over Aunt Hilda. Are you sure there's nothing I can do to help you with dinner, Aunt Hilda?
Nothing. Thank you.
Oh, it's still raining.
One need not be too clever to see that. In Holland, it seems always to be raining now. Rain, mud, and despair.
I remember when I came here years ago. It was winter. I was in time for the skaters' races.
Yeah. Skaters' races.
And the booths. Remember the little booths that sold chocolate and milk cooked with aniseed? And the little cakes, all the varieties of gingerbread? Oh, how I loved them.
Hand me the spoon.
Here. Here you are.
Thank you. Tell me about America. What is it like?
Well, it's too large to describe in a sentence or two, Aunt Hilda. When the war is over, you must come visit us.
When the war is over.
Well, it can't last forever. And America's helping. And remember, our leader, President Roosevelt, is himself of Dutch ancestry.
Tomorrow, perhaps I will make you a gingerbread cake.
Yes, I won her over slowly. And on Thursday, when I left for Harlingen, she said goodbye to me at the door with Uncle Brum.
You know where to meet him, Paul. You have everything clear?
Yeah. Everything, Uncle Brum. I'm to meet him beside the monument of the stone man on the North Sea dikes. I'll be knotting and unknotting a piece of string so he'll know me.
Good, good. We will see you later tonight, then?
Yeah.
Paul? Here. This is for you. In case you should have need of it.
My pistol.
Take it back.
Thank you. Thank you, Aunt Hilda.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This habit you have of knotting and unknotting string, is it not a waste of time?
Nothing is a waste if it serves a purpose. Herr Buck?
Yeah, Lieutenant Alfond. We meet as planned.
The information. Do you have it?
Yeah.
Where? Where?
In my head. You'll have to memorize it as I give it to you. I could not take a chance of writing anything down.
I'll remember then.
Remember it and use it well. There are 40,000 Nazi troops in Holland and Belgium. These troops will be on the move within 2 weeks.
Where are they going?
Northern Italy. They'll be used to cut off the American advance there.
The colonel did suspect the worst. Thank you. Thank you. I'll radio this out tonight.
It is appropriate, is it not, for us to meet under the statue of this stone man? See the inscription?
Terminus.
Yeah. It means thus far and no farther. A threat to the sea that is held back by the dikes.
Thus far and no farther. A threat also to the Nazis?
Yeah. You understand me well. Remember me to your uncle. And goodbye for now.
book is in constant danger of discovery by the Gestapo, Paul. That's why he could not take a chance and write that information down for you.
It wasn't necessary, Uncle Brom. He passed it from his head to mine.
When will you radio it to London?
It's after midnight. I think I can start now. What's that?
The car stopping in front of the house. There are two men getting out.
So late? Who are they, Brown? Do you know them?
No, I don't.
I'm afraid it was like this once before when they came to get my family. Paul? We were turned in then by someone who pretended to be a friend.
Hilda.
Aunt Hilda, do you believe...
I don't know. I don't know what to believe.
I'll answer it.
Herr Kelderman.
Yeah?
We have business with you.
Come in. This is my wife and my nephew, Paul Halfond.
Your nephew? Max, take a good look at him.
Huh?
Would you say he looks as if he's to be trusted?
I never trust a man who looks so innocent.
What are you talking about? Who are you?
Do not be so suspicious. We are from Hans Bock. We're members of the underground.
Underground? I was not conscious there was an underground in the Netherlands. What do you want with us?
Ah, you're being very careful. I can see that, Herr Kelderman, and that's good. And perhaps this will prove who we are. Would you not say that is Herr Bock's own signature?
Yeah, that is all right.
Mm-hmm.
I know it well.
You're convinced now. Read it aloud.
Uncle Brown.
Let me read it, Paul. Have reason to distrust man you sent me today. Show proof who he is or turn him over to these men for underground execution. This is ridiculous. I do not understand.
Nor I. Herr Bock seemed to trust me well enough this afternoon.
Your nephew is a German spy, a traitor in our midst.
The devil he is. I do not believe that. Not Paul. He's not a spy, not for the Germans. You want proof? I will give you proof. See here, in the wine cellar at... This is his shortwave radio. He was going to send a message tonight. He is a friend. He is an ally. He's a member of the American OSS. Don't you believe me? What is it? What is the matter?
We believe you well enough. Thank you for giving us proof of what we suspected.
What's this?
Shall I show them my badge, Herr Commander?
Do that, Sergeant. Do that.
Take a good look.
The skull and crossbones.
The Gestapo.
We've been trailing Herr Bock, but we had no definite proof that he was connected with the underground. We only suspected. And today we saw him meet your... nephew here on the North Sea dikes.
Why did you wait until now?
We figured that if we arrested them then and there, we might get nothing from them. So we waited. We arrested Herr Bock, and we found a paper with his signature on it.
That note you showed us was forged.
Quite right, Frau Kelderman. The note was forged.
Herr little
Bock
by little.
Tell us anything.
Inch by
now
inch.
Can no longer.
I have made my way to the kitchen door.
You have killed him.
Right again, Frau Kelderman.
And then around the corner.
Obliged to your husband for supplying us.
And up the back stairs.
Hey, Commander, he escapes.
After him.
Halt!
Run, Paul! The attic!
Halt! Or he will go worse with you!
In a flood of memory, it came back. Chamber of horrors, an hour's drive from Washington. My mouth was dry as ashes, but the palms of my hands were wringing wet. Along the dark hall, my revolver drawn. Everything I had been taught led up to this. This moment.
We have you covered from both sides. Drop your gun.
Well, fire. Fire. Fire again. Into the darkness. But this time there was no instructor to say good work, Paul. There was just a gun in my back and a leader of the Gestapo to say...
You are under arrest, Lieutenant Halfond. How long do you think you can hold out? We have ways of making you talk.
No, no.
Must we convince you more? Sergeant.
Ja, Herr Kommando.
Ja. Well?
Perhaps we'll have better luck if we question your aunt. Sergeant, get Frau Kelderman. Bring her here.
No, no, no. Don't do that. Let her alone.
Simply because you request it. Sergeant, do as I say. We'll see how long she holds out. If she is obstinate, we'll have a shot... and you will be a witness, Lieutenant. You find this amusing, Lieutenant Halfond?
Well, I know when I'm beaten.
Don't bother the old lady or the old man either.
What are you saying?
Well, I thought I could hold out. I can see now there's no point in holding out. You've won. What more is there to say?
If you're just stalling for time...
I'm not stalling, Herr Commander. I'll prove it. I'll confess everything. Tell you everything you want to know.
Now you're becoming smart.
And so I told them everything they wanted to know. General Donovan heads the OSS in Washington. The OSS is part of the American State Department. The Minister of Finance in Britain is also head of the British Secret Intelligence.
Go ahead, Lieutenant Oliphant. We're listening. Corporal, take this down.
I gave them a mixture of fact and fantasy that would have done the German propaganda ministry proud. The true facts I told them, I knew they already knew. The rest they seemed to accept at face value. So I capped my story with a real whopper. You taking all this down, Corporal? Well, take this down with a red pencil. An invasion of North Holland is part of the Allied plan.
What?
The invasion will be made in the eastern area of Friesland on the Dutch North Sea coast.
You are lying to us, you... We'll see if you know you're beaten. Perhaps you've been on the wrong side, Lieutenant Hartfant. You've set up a radio? I think you ought to use it. Tonight.
Time is now 2300. 2300. Paul Holfond calling headquarters. Can you hear me? Over.
OSS headquarters to Paul Holfond. You're coming in clear. Been waiting for your message, Paul. Good to hear your voice.
What did you say? There's a gun in your back.
I can see it's going to take a lot to convince you. Paul Holfond to headquarters. Listen. Listen carefully. It's stinking weather for a drop, but I've got to have supplies. It's darned important. Over.
Headquarters to Holfond. Would you mind repeating that so we're sure? Repeat, please. Over.
What the devil's the matter? You said you were getting darn good reception. I said the weather's lousy, but it's darned important that I get a supply drop at designated point tomorrow night. Can't make it any darn clearer than that. Over.
Okay. Okay, Paul. We get it. It's darn clear now. You'll get your supply drop. Good night. Over and out.
Well, you heard it yourself. The drop will be made. Are you beginning to be convinced of my sincerity?
Were you nervous, Lieutenant?
What? Why do you say that?
I never heard you use such language before.
Oh, I expect to get over my nervousness after I've broadcast many of these radio messages for you, Commander Brandt. After that, they drove me back to the jail. Commander Brandt of the Gestapo had never heard me use such language before, and neither had OSS headquarters. In the army, they used to make fun of me because of my proper speech. I gambled on the chance that the radio operator who knew me would detect something odd about my speech. When he answered back the same way, I knew he understood I was a prisoner of the Germans, and that the supply drop would probably save my neck. I didn't sleep that night, and I didn't really take a deep breath until 11 o'clock the next morning.
Good morning, Lieutenant. Would you care, perhaps, for a piece of chocolate? An American cigarette?
I knew the drop had been successful. They sent us home. Uncle Brom, Aunt Hilda, and me. But we brought a boarder with us in the person of Commander Brandt. House was different now. Aunt Hilda prepared meals silently. Uncle Brom smoked his pipe and looked at me, wondering. And twice a week they sat in the living room and watched and listened as Commander Brandt and I contacted OSS headquarters.
OSS headquarters to Paul Halvin. This is important. 4 and 20 blackbirds are coming through the rye. Storm clouds overhead. Take in your washing. Good night. Over and out.
Hmm. What did that mean?
15,000 more Allied troops are added to preparations for the invasion of Holland.
Well,
And we will rush 20,000 more German troops to the Dutch North Sea coast. Already we have 40,000 troops waiting there. We were going to send them to... elsewhere. But they will undoubtedly be of more use here.
Undoubtedly.
Yeah. Well, I'm going up to bed now. Dankeschön. The dinner was very good, Frau Kelderman.
I cannot help being a good cook.
Yes, well.
Good night.
It's thoughtful of him to leave us alone so much.
Is it? I do not care much for your company.
Hilda, maybe he's got his reasons.
I wanted to tell them my reasons, but I didn't dare. Instead, I stood at the piano and played the scale with one finger. Even Uncle Brum was getting to the point where he couldn't look me straight in the eye. But as Uncle Brum became more suspicious, Commander Brandt became less suspicious.
I think I will go up to bed, too.
Something was wrong with the piano. The C was sharp, as if something were pressing on it, making it sharp. I walked around to the back of the baby grand, and I saw it. It was a small, round disc the size of an overcoat button. I knew it was attached to a dictaphone in Brandt's room. That was why he left us alone so much. I'd give him something to listen to.
Paul, I know there must be some explanations for these things you are doing.
Now look, you haven't had it so good for years. Eggs on the table. When did you have eggs on the table last? Privileges nobody else has. Extra ration books. You might as well face it. This is a new order, Germany's order. And if you're smart like I am, you'll fall in with them.
Paul, is this you?
I told you he was a traitor, a spy. I warned you.
You wanted to see me, Herr Commander?
Yeah, Paul. Thank you for coming to my office so promptly at my call.
I follow orders.
So I'm beginning to see. Sit down. I want you to hear something.
I think I'll go up to bed, well, too.
I don't understand.
Simple. A dictaphone.
I still don't...
I know there must be some explanation.
That's Uncle Brum.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Now, look. You haven't had it so good for years. That's me. Eggs on the table. Well, what's the idea of doing it on the table last? Privileges nobody else has. Extra ration books. You might as well face it. This is a new order. Germany.
You have convinced me completely.
If you're smart like I am, you fall in with them.
I have a proposition for you.
Yes?
I want you to go to England for us. Act as our double agent. You can be more valuable to us there.
Leave Holland?
Huh?
But aren't I a great help to you here?
I know the risk it involves. But Germany will pay you well after the war. Think it over.
I thought it over and let him convince me. And a few days later, a German stormtrooper gave me a personal escort to the border. And I made my way back from the enemy lines. After I left, my aunt and uncle escaped and were hidden by the underground. And it wasn't until the war was over that I was able to see them and explain.
Lieutenant Paul Halfen returned to OSS headquarters, and thousands of Nazi troops waited on the shore of the North Sea for an invasion that never came. Thus, once again, the report of another OSS agent closed with the words,
"Mission accomplished."
Listen again next week for another true adventure from the files of the OSS on
Cloak and Dagger.
In today's Cloak and Dagger adventure as Paul Halfond was Les Tremaine. Brahm was played by Stefan Schnabel, Hilda by Virginia Payne, Bant by Barry Kroger, the Colonel by Raymond Edward Johnson. Others were Carl Weber, Jerry Jarrett, Arnold Robertson, and Bob Wilde. The script was written by Winifred Wolfe and Jack Gordon. The music was under the direction of Murray Ross. Today's true OSS adventure was based on the book Cloak and Dagger by Corey Ford and Alistair McBain. This program was produced by Louis G. Cowan and Alfred Hollander and was under the direction of Sherman Marks. Programs, get your programs here. Mystery fans, there's an exciting evening waiting for you tonight on NBC. First, some listener will have a chance to win a double reward for solving the case on $1,000 reward. Next, when a woman reads her own obituary in the paper, the saint finds himself involved in a case that leads to murder. Then Sam Spade works his way through the rod and reel caper. Yes, you'll find adventure here tonight. Stay tuned now for High Adventure and the Big Guy on NBC.
All right, so that's going to wrap up this episode of OTR Playlist. I hope you enjoyed these. If you have any suggestions for shows, send them to me at otrplaylist@gmail.com. I'd love to get some suggestions. Like I said, I'm still new to the old-time radio scene. I enjoy it a lot, and what I hear, I really enjoy, but there's a lot of shows that I'm not familiar with, so I would love people to give me their comments on some shows, suggestions, and let me know what I could do differently on this show. So thanks a lot, and we'll see you next time on OTR Playlist.